On this week's Mouse Chat, we have part two of our Jim Hill interview. Jim has the inside track of everything new that's going on at Walt Disney World, from parks and resorts, news, rumors, and what's planned for 2013 and beyond. We're going to get into that interview here in just a moment. I also just wanted to let everyone know that we have our first Disney World Mouse Chat fan meetup. That's going to be September 13th, which is Friday the 13th, over at Disney Hollywood Studios. And this is also during Disney's Villains Weekend. We have a dessert party, a VIP Fantasmic dessert party planned for everybody. There is an admission price to that, which I believe is $39 for the VIP viewing area, plus the desserts and things that we're going to be serving there. And that kicks off your night. After the dessert party, Disney Hollywood Studios is going to be also open until 1 a.m. for guests. And so we'll be doing those activities as well. You can find out all about this, plus rooms and other events that we have planned for that September weekend over at mousechat.net. And here is Jim Hill.
So, and this is what everyone wants to know. Mm-hmm. Do you think the Seven Dwarfs Mine Train ride is going to open before the end of 2013?
Okay. I know that they are trying their damnedest to get it open, mostly for test and adjust reasons. I mean, they're right now, between the Royal Princess Hall and that, you know, there's a belief that they're really not getting the legitimate sense of how well this part of the park is going to do. And the fact that they keep having to shut down, for example, the access between Little Mermaid and the circus area, to funnel construction equipment in and out.
How is that why they keep doing that? It didn't make any sense to have that area open, but it does now that you mentioned that.
Well, the weird thing is the original plan for that side of the park was that, and again, stressing original, this is back when instead of the circus area, you had Pixie Hollow. Yep. And instead of Seven Dwarfs Mine Train, you had one long show building that on one side was Cinderella Chateau, and on the other side was the Woodcutter's Cottage where Sleeping Beauty and the three fairies hung out. And, you know, this was, you know, you had these, you know, between the Bells, you know, Storytime with Belle and these three experiences, it was going to be very princess heavy. But in that version of the plan, they were going to be able to open relatively quickly because the construction alley was going to go through where Gaston's was. In fact, there's a lot of real frustration within Imagineering, because when Tom Staggs came in and said, whoa, we can't have all this princess crap. We have to have something in here for, you know, little boys.
Can we quote
and
you on
that's
that?
What the Seven Dwarfs Mine Train, which he actually has been in the works for since, I want to say, the mid-90s. You know, that came off the drawing table and got dropped in really quickly. But that meant that the area they refer to as the construction umbilicus, the road in and out from backstage where all the construction equipment and that sort of thing was going to come through, that was originally now where Gaston's is. And Gaston's was going to be the very last thing that was going to open. And, you know, there's a lot of Imagineers right now that said, look, if we'd stuck to that plan and we'd had the opportunity, we wouldn't have done Gaston's. That would have been the Snuggly Duckling from, you know, Tangled. We would have had the time to go, well, you know, we've got the Beast Castle and but let's get another princess in here if we can.
And Snuggly Duckling would have been awesome. I love that movie, and I'm so upset that they gave Tangled a bathroom, but we can get to that in a minute.
It's a nicely themed bathroom from what I've
heard. It's just so wrong. I mean, that's like one of their best movies they've had in forever, and to give it a bathroom? I don't know. It just seems kind of weird.
So can you explain, what the Tangled
interesting
bathroom
you,
is?
You say this because, last year was out in Anaheim at the D23 did a 75 years of Disney feature animation thing. And one of these presentations they did over the 2 days was Tony Baxter, Eddie Sato, and I'm forgetting the name of the other Imagineer. But they were talking about bringing attractions, you know, bringing attractions into the park that were based on movies. And I don't know if this was because Tony knew he was headed out the door soon or whatever the case was. But Tony was talking about, geez, I hope we don't make the same mistake we made with The Little Mermaid. And it was like, mistake? He said, it took us 20 years to get a little mermaid ride in the park. And we, and again, it's the thing, we were designing the Little Mermaid ride before the movie came out. You know, that in fact, I remember talking with Mark Eads about, he was, you know, working in Imagineering at that time. And he, you know, his boss at the point said, go over to the animation thing. They're working on this movie now about mermaids and see if there's anything there. And this was before, this is after, you know, after they threw them out of the feature animation building. So, you know, all these animators are working out of trailers and warehouses. And so Mark goes over and here's Ron Clements and John Musker, and they show him art and they show them the songs and, you know, some work in progress stuff. It's like, oh, this is great. We really should do a ride. And they were going to actually pull out the motorboat ride at Disneyland, which is, God, been gone for a decade or more now, and throw it in there. And, but it, you know, every time they came around, it was like, you know, geez, you know, that it was the wrong time or it was the wrong place or the money ran out or that sort of thing. And suddenly it was 20 years before they finally built this thing. And so for Tony's way of thinking, it's like, look, Tangled is already what Little Mermaid was. This is a character that people love. This is a vivid environment. This is a set of characters that people enjoy. They already know the songs by heart. It's like, we should make that attraction today. We should not wait 20 years to build a Tangled ride. And, you know, in a weird sort of way, Tony got his wish, you know?
Kind of.
Yeah. Well, they'll see how popular, they have to see if the bathroom's popular first, and then they'll decide. Well,
to be fair here, in fact,
it's beautiful from the pictures.
In fact, this is what kills me. I was told this story when I was out in California last month. It's like November of 2010. The movie's just come out, and it's such a huge hit. And, you know, so I won't name the Imagineer, but he comes to the work on Monday, and they're like, all right, you know, Tangle, yeah, I need you to design Rapunzel's Tower, you know, and we're going to need it for a presentation on Thursday. And it's like, really? Oh, cool. And so, you know, guy calls the animation research library, and they send him all over the reference material, and he keeps calling his bosses and goes, all right, I'm designing it. I'm doing the best job I can, but I kind of need to know, is it a meet and greet at the bottom? No. Keeps working. So, is it for like the entrance of a ride? No. And it's like, and finally, you know, he delivers it on Thursday, and it's like, what is this for? It's like, oh, well, we're putting it behind a bathroom. And it's like, oh, you know, spent four days, you know, putting in, you know, working, you know, around the clock to deliver this beautiful, ideal, you know, realized, fully realized, three-dimensional version of Rapunzel's Tower. And it's for a bathroom? And it's like, well, yeah, you know, we got a bathroom and, you know, we like the movie, but this is the fastest we can get it into that park. And that's what this really is. This is about, you know, there was no place left on the map to put Rapunzel. And it's like, well, we can put her here. Yeah. And in fact, I'm waiting on a phone call now because evidently they only made the decision that they weren't really going to do the meet and greet, you know, recently, that evidently the plan really was for, you know, you pee, you wash your hands and, hey, there's Flynn Rider.
That's terrible. That's so awkward sound. I mean, really, even if it's just in that area, it just seems kind of awkward, you know?
I know. But at the same time, it's that they are already dealing with a lot of little kids who are running over to, you know, they'll come into Fantasyland, they look, oh, it's Rapunzel's Tower, and they bolt. You know, they run right over there, and yeah, they see the buildings, and it's like, I pee here?
Yeah, I think my daughter is a big Rapunzel fan. She is 6, and I'm sure she's going to be disappointed.
Well, you can also charge your iPhone or iPad there.
Oh, that's right. You're right. You can.
But that's their, you know, okay, we can't put the meet and greet here, but we can at least do something so, you know, they won't kill us. All right.
So, in effect,
they're counting on the social media people, you know, because the effect of, well, I can charge my iPhone here. It's like, okay, so it isn't terrible, you know.
Well, don't you think that, I mean, there's only like, what, two areas with six plugs each? It's not even a lot, you know.
But that lets you know how late in the game they made this decision. Up until then, they, you know, that was going to be Flynn. That's where you're going to, you know, that's where you're going to hang out with Rapunzel. So, yeah.
Well, at least the only positive is they got rid of the old Skyway building and they actually put something there. But
yeah,
well,
because that just looked kind of like an eyesore. Everyone who knew what it had been, it just looked kind of awkward and sad. And other people were like, well, what's up there? Maybe we can go up there. No, there's nothing up there.
So now we're kind of in that same situation. I mean, there's Rapunzel Tower. You can't go up there.
Yeah.
You know. But on the other hand, to be fair, one of the things they did do with this area is create a ridiculous amount of stroller parking. So it won't quite be as tight and such a gauntlet to get through that side of the park now that you know. But again, it's a bathroom and it's stroller parking. It's not a ride.
Well, yeah, and that was always a bad area. That was always a congestion point, trying to get in to a haunted mansion through there.
And it's not going to get any better for about a year. Because, you know, they just this week shut down those bathrooms behind Peter Pan. Those have got to get torn out. That side of the building, you know, they're extending the queue for Peter Pan into that area. And this is where the new interactive elements go, where you can, you know, try to capture Peter's shadow and, you know, stuff like that. So it's going to be, you know, when it's done, it'll be cool in there and it'll be, you know, you can get some nice pictures of Rapunzel's Tower. And I know that they are already trying to figure out how to address people's expectations about Rapunzel and Flynn Rider, that particularly given that they've been displaced out of that theme park by Merida. And in fact, Merida is about, you know, Merida's going to be booted shortly herself for the Snow Queen and her sister from Frozen. Which, by the way, if your daughter's a big Tangled fan, I've seen enough of Frozen. What's the proper way to describe this? If Tangled is the Little Mermaid, as in, you know, it's the movie that tells people, wow, Disney knows how to make this princess movies again. Frozen is Beauty and the Beast. This is the one that everyone's going to go, holy crap. You know,
wow. I haven't even heard anything about Frozen. When's that supposed
to come out? When is it coming out?
Yeah, Frozen, I've never heard that one either.
Frozen is coming out in November. And you will see your first. In fact, I've been after the people at the studio because, again, I've seen I've been looking at stuff for this movie since June of last year, and the score is by the folks. It's Kristen and Bobby Lopez. They're the folks who did. Bobby actually did the work for. You know him from the songs that are in Avenue Q. He wrote the music for that. He and his wife did the score for Finding Nemo the musical. They did all the music for the new Winnie the Pooh movie, and Bobby's on Broadway now with the two South Proth guys for Book of Mormon. So this is a guy who can write a killer score. And they've got the young lady who I'm blanking her name now, who was the first Elphaba on Broadway, voicing the Snow Queen. And Kirsten Bell is the good sister, or the sister who's going to try to save her sister from becoming the evil Snow Queen. It's a very different Disney princess movie. And it's set in this beautiful, you know, snowy situation, or, you know, countryside, you know, think Norway, Iceland, that sort of thing. Only when the sister who becomes the Snow Queen goes rogue, you know, it goes from being winter 3 months out of the year to winter all year. And this is why Kirsten Bell's character is journeying basically into the Arctic to try to, you know, convince her sister to get back in touch with her human side. It's got a killer score. It's got a great story. It's got an amazing look. But again, it's one of these things where everybody's working on it is just kind of losing their mind, because it's like, this isn't supposed to be this good this early. You know, in fact, they've just now gone back and they're working a little bit on the first act of the film, because the last two acts of the film are so strong that it's like they want to make sure the opening is just as good and it just feeds into everything. But yeah, you'll see the first trailer for that in June. It comes out in November. And then from there, you know, every little girl on the planet is going to want Snow Queen stuff. Or, excuse me, again, I apologize, because this is the new Disney. You can't call, you know, Rapunzel, Rapunzel. You have to call her Tangled. So you can't call the Snow Queen the Snow Queen, because boys won't go to a movie with the name Queen in it. So it's called Frozen. But again, out in November. And so they're looking for opportunities to bring that new princess into the park. You know, I don't know, maybe if Tangled can get a bathroom, maybe they can put Frozen over by the, you know, the snow cone cart. I don't know. I just, you know, you want them to do right by these characters. But it's just going to be tough, because, but they're looking to where Merida has her meet and greet right now is where, you know, the Snow Queen and her sister will be hanging out. Unless, of course, they decide they want to put the Sophia the First meet and greet in there. And, you know, that's another character, again, now that we're talking Disney Junior, that has really, really, really caught on, and in a big way. And they're going to want to get her into the parks very quickly.
Is she over at Hollywood and Vine?
That's the first place. But, you know, the belief is that, you know, that's, in fact, where it gets kind of strange, because obviously they've got a Disney Junior themed, you know, dining event going on there. But, you know, that evidently already at guest relations at the Kingdom, they have people asking, where's Sophia? And it's like, crap, we may have to bring her over here. So, so it may be that, you know, you're kind of double teaming a character, which if you think about it, they're already doing at Disney anyway. I mean, where do you go to see the Beauty and the Beast stage show? You see it at Disney Hollywood Studios. Where, if you want to dine with Belle and Beast, or you have a story told to you by Belle, where are you going? You're going to New Fantasyland. So, you know, and or if you want to get the Belle and Beast autograph, you go to France in Epcot. You know, just it gets confusing.
They make their rounds.
They're very busy.
Right. They're a very busy pair. They keep moving around.
So what else new have you, or you always have the inside scoop. Anything new that you've heard that might be under construction in 2013 or 2014, just, you know, throughout any of the parks at Disney? Anything new on Avatar or anything?
Yeah, what's next for Epcot?
Epcot or anything like that?
Well, the most likely, the newest thing for Epcot, they are, and again, this kind of keys off of the new My Disney Experience, Magic Bands, that sort of thing. They're looking to create a couple of new areas for people to book. If, for example, if you want to see, you know, Illuminations Reflection of Earth, and you've booked your My Disney Experience package, they're looking to create a couple of different new viewing areas for that show. And among the things that they're looking to do is, you know how you sort of turn the corner at World Showcase Lagoon when you're in Canada? You know, there's sort of that rock work that, you know, right down by the water.
Yeah.
They're actually looking to create sort of a new promontory of rock that would have space for 200 to 300 people that, you know, would, and you'd show up at the, you know, a half hour before, you know, the illuminations begin at this special gate and sort of show your wristband, and they wave it, they see you're booked in, and you come down. You're going to have this amazing view. But on the other side of the lagoon, they're actually talking about, I guess they've done the survey work, and they're kind of now looking around for a corporation that's willing to help them with the funding. But they're talking about a Moroccan restaurant that would be right down by the water that would correct the mistake of the San Angelo Inn, the new Mexican restaurant, which, don't get me wrong, food's spectacular. It's a beautiful looking building, but it's just not set up. If you deliberately set up a dining package, you know, so you're in that building when Illuminations is happening, you actually get a pretty crummy view of, you know, the nighttime spectacular. You know, you can't really see, you know, it's just not set up that way. Whereas the Moroccan restaurant supposedly would be designed with the notion that people would want to be looking out on the water and, you know, would deliberately be booking to be in this restaurant to have that view, and especially for the nighttime fireworks show. So, so that's those two were, you know, probably the more, you know, more likely things to get off the drawing board for Epcot. And in fact, if I were a betting man, I bet Canada, the special viewing area for Canada would go first, and then be followed by the Moroccan restaurant. But if we're talking ride shows and attractions, yeah, the only thing that's kind of perking along is a possible, yet another possible redo of Imagination. Only this one is somewhat controversial. All right.
You know, oh, just go into it.
Well, that pavilion. It's got Captain EO.
I actually like these characters, and yeah. I like the guys who make this show. It's Phineas and Ferb.
Oh, you know,
the idea is that, you know, here you have two characters who, you know, I know what we're going to do today, Ferb. You know, these are two characters who live by their imaginations, who are supremely creative, who, you know, have turned out to be Disney's SpongeBob. You know, I mean, they're you know, they've just renewed them for, I want to say, a fourth season. You know, there's 100-some-odd episodes in the can. They've gone internationally. They've got an ice show. There's a live act, you know. I mean, for example, there's the Mission Marvel, you know, special episode this summer. There's the live-action feature coming out for 2014. It's Phineas and Ferb aren't going anywhere. So it makes sense. And they're already in the parks, in a way, in the Agent P thing. So it's like,
yeah,
would be fun to give them this building and to give, you know, to put a character in here or a set of characters in here that the kids today know, and, you know, who are colossally inventive. So it's like, you know, but see, the problem is that for you tell this to a bunch of kids and they go, yay! All right. And you tell it to a bunch of their parents and they go, no! Because it's like they grew up with the Dreamfinder and Figment.
Yeah.
And for this version of it, they finally absolutely go away. And from the retail side of things, I will tell you that the people for Epcot keep throwing themselves on that grenade because they're like, do you understand how much Figment plush we sell a year? You know, they do annually $500,000 of Figment plush, and let alone the Figment pins or the t-shirts or the hats. So they don't want that money to go away. You know, it's like, can't we do something with Figment? Can't he stay some way? And meanwhile, I mean, this is a top to bottom, you know, Phineas and Ferb redo that they would be looking at doing in place of the Honey, I Shrunk the Audience thing. You know, a special Phineas and Ferb film, and there'd be, you know, a Dr. Doofenshmirtz component, and there'd be a Perry the Platypus. I mean, it's characters. I mean, yeah. It's not, you know, it's stepping away from the Imagination Pavilion that so many baby boomers, you know, saw, you know, when they came here with their, you know, came to Epcot with their parents.
Yeah, but that version of the pavilion's been dead for so long since the new Figment ride and then Captain EO. There's just nothing there anymore. I mean, it can be like New Year's Day and there's no wait at that pavilion. You can just walk right on.
I agree, but the problem with the Walt Disney Company has found is often it, you know, they find themselves a lot of the times dealing with an echo chamber in that they'll think, oh my God, did you see what's being written online? And it's like, and, you know, it's on this webpage and that webpage. And clearly there's thousands of people who are very upset about it. It's like, no, it's about four or five guys who are going to different webpages and all of them, you know, saying the same thing. that, you know, and that's kind of what they think they're now dealing with like Friends of Figment. But at the same time, they'll turn around. I mean, there's another Figment statue being released at Art of Disney, I want to say, in 4 or 5 weeks. So they anticipate that'll sell clean. But, you know, that's, what, 400 or 500 units?
Yeah, those type of things.
You know, just there's clearly love for that character. But, you know, like you were saying, the pavilion itself is just not working the way it's supposed to. So wouldn't it be better to put a set of characters in there that people would line up to see? It's just for a lot of people in the parks. In fact, again, going back to sort of Tangled, it was when you talk about characters and building an attraction around the characters, it's like, tell me in 5 years they'll be as popular. Tell me in 10 years they'll be as popular. I mean, hell, that's the excuse that Disney used for letting Harry Potter get away when they were having really, really difficult negotiations with J.K. Rowling. It's like, she's a pain in the ass. And, you know, just like, look, tell me in 5 years anybody's going to really care about the boy who lived. You know, it just, we have characters. Don't worry about this. No one's ever going to lose sleep over the fact that we didn't keep Harry Potter, you know. So,
yeah,
you know, and yes, that executive no longer works for the company. So,
it's hard because you could think, you know, if they did Kim Possible or something, then that pavilion would be dated.
Yep.
Already,
yep.
And so you never know.
The irony is that the Kim Possible guys, that's Bob Schooley and Mark McCorkle, they would still be at Disney. They would still be doing Kim Possible stuff, that if it weren't for the fact that DreamWorks hired them to go over and do their Penguins of Madagascar, you know, animated series. Those guys loved working for Disney. They loved Kim. In fact, one of the great regrets of their life, I remember talking with Bob about this, was they had a Kim Possible movie written that the studios was going to produce, a live action Kim movie. And they turned in the script and everybody at the studio was like, oh my God, the script is amazing. You did such a nice job. And who knew that these television guys could write movies? And, you know, come to think of it, we have a movie script that's kind of in trouble, but it would, you know, if you could do the same thing with this to give that sort of same tone and same, you know, and then, well, all right, sure, we'll help. And so they give them the script to Sky High, and Bob and Mark rewrite it and said, worst thing of my life. We wrote it and we go into this meeting and it's like, oh my God, you did such a great job. But now I have this terrible problem. I have two good scripts. And it's like, and finally, you know, it was like Eisner. Evidently, it makes it to Eisner's desk. He's like, look, Kim is already making me money. All right. I've got a TV series and Kim will be here forever. But on the other hand, if I start Sky High and this turns into a successful series of films, I get another set of characters. So I'm going with Sky High. You know, I mean, Eisner did this a lot. Eisner, you know, for example, you know, when, you know, Lasseter, who was trying to end the Pixar deal, they actually offered very early on to Eisner, said, hey, we can give you Toy Story 3. And Eisner was like, Toy Story 3, set of characters I already know, versus Cars, where, you know, he's sitting there with the report on his desk about how many Hot Wheels Mattel sells every year. And it's like, nope, we're going with Cars. So, you know, Michael always defaulted to new characters, more, sure. Mm. So Iger, different guy. You know, it's just sort of like, I would like to buy your characters. Thank you, Mr. Lucas. So, that's another interesting situation right there.
Now, you talked a little bit about My Magic Plus when we were talking about one of the attractions. What's the word been on the street so far for, you know, rolling it out, how it's going, what they're looking at, you know, when they're finally going to get it kind of up and running?
Here's the problem. And to be honest, I'm kind of part of the problem. The blogosphere has been leaking about the Magic Bands, my Disney experience, you know, for months now. So everybody's watching this thing that normally, if the word had not leaked, you know, Disney would be able to test this relatively quietly and, you know, fix the kinks and the bugs before it went public. And what's happened now is everybody is on the alert. Everybody is paying attention. So, you know, for example, the test that they did with, you know, when they were recruiting people who were flying into Orlando.
Yeah, the Fast Pass Plus.
I want to say last April, last May.
Yeah.
And they were getting them, you know, they were signing up for the Magical Express. They were like, oh, is this for the Disney Express thing? Is this for the Magic Bands? And like, how do you know about this? I read the web, you know. And they were just getting really bad test results from these people. And the most recent test they did where they recruited 100 cast members and took them over to the Animal Kingdom Lodge and gave them wristbands. It went really badly. Yeah, but it went badly because the software for this thing is written by a bunch of 20-year-olds straight out of school who don't know Disney culture, who haven't worked in the parks yet. So they were having problems. Like, for example, they give a wristband to somebody who was staying on the concierge level at the hotel. And, you know, it worked in the gift shop. It worked to get them into the room. But when they go to get into the concierge lounge, you know, it wouldn't work. And, you know, they go to the 20-year-old who wrote the code and said, well, you didn't tell me the people staying in the concierge level would want to get into the concierge lounge. So it's like, you know, you had to educate the people who were writing the code about what people actually do in a Disney theme park. So they're fixing that now. They're working on the code. In fact, Len was telling me the story about being in the hotel that day and literally encountering a guy walking down the hallway with a cell phone under, you know, sort of in the crook of his arm, you know, pressed against his ear. And he had a laptop that he was fixing code as he was walking down the hall. So, I mean, they're doing what they can. And this is a $1.5 billion thing. All right. So, you know, I know there's a lot of Disney fans who kind of want to pretend this is going to go away, and it's not. You know, you spend $1.5 billion, you're going to stick with that. And Disney will get this to work eventually. But, you know, when they realized last fall it wasn't going to work or it wasn't going to be ready to roll out in January, that's why we got limited time magic. I mean, that's why we have this year full of weird little short events that everyone looks at and it's like, well, what is that about? And it's like, that's to buy Disney more time to fix the system. You know, if it had worked, if it had been ready to go right now, we'd be in the middle of the first set of guests coming back from the Disney World vacations and just blithering about how cool it was to be able to, you know, when you got to the turnstile of the park, you didn't have to dig into the purse, to pull out the wallet, to find the tickets, to make sure that you gave the right one to each of your children and, you know, did the thumbprint thing. It's just, you know, the notion that you walk up and just press your wristband and you're go, you know, just you're into the park that much faster. You're in having fun that much faster. When this works, when this is finally up and running the way it's supposed to run and people are booking things in advance. And I know for people who've been to Disney a lot previously, this is going to be kind of a sea change for them. And there are people who resist change, but this, let's be honest here, this isn't aimed at people who've been to Disney World before. This is aimed at the millennials who are now having their kids. And these are the kids who, you know, step out of the womb and are handed an iPad. All right. They love technology. They love, you know, connectivity. And the notion that they're going to be in a situation like this where they're in a theme park and, you know, when they're at home, they design their own small world doll. And as they're floating through the attraction, suddenly a flat panel kicks on and there's your small world doll dancing in front of you and waving at you and saying your name. That's going to be cool. There's a lot of aspects of this that once they all go live that are going to fundamentally change the Disney vacation experience for the better. And I know that there are people who don't believe that, you know, just they want their old-fashioned Disney vacation. And we don't live in that world anymore. I mean, when's the last time you were in a line at Walt Disney World and had a conversation with anybody? You know, if you look around the queue now, if you're standing in the queue, people are face down on their phone anyway. you know, checking messages, or they're, you know, playing a game or that sort of thing. You know, Disney's just doing this stuff with technology because this is the world we live in now. And, do I wish it was 1971 and Disney World was, you know, brand spanky new and there were ticket books and, you know, that like they were back then? I don't know. Maybe it might be fun to do for a day.
Yeah, it'd be a different world, but
yeah,
I don't know if I'd want to live there, so to speak.
Yeah. It's so strange the world we live in. Now, think about when you're out in public now and, you know, suddenly the battery in your phone dies. And this is a bad thing. You can't get a hold of people, you know, and it's
insert dramatic gasp.
Yeah. You know, I remember what it was like. We had one phone in the house and it was on a wire on the wall and, you know, there was no answering machine. And, you know, it's that great Louis C.K. thing about the notion of if you called and nobody picked up, you didn't leave a message because there was nothing to do that. But that we don't live in that world anymore. And Disney is just trying to change the parks for the generation, the next group of people who they want to keep coming back to the parks every 3.75 years. So, you know, and the very people you people, you know, sell the packages to these days. I mean, do you get the sense that they're excited about this at all, or?
Well, there some people are.
Yeah, it depends on the person.
I had a lot of people do that. The preview, I guess, the trial of it back in September. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them just said it was too much work.
Really?
Yes.
Well, I mean, don't get me wrong. I understand the whole pre-booking of attractions. That does kind of seem like homework to me. You know, and if I'm going on vacation, do I really want to do homework? But
well, and if you don't do it, you know, it's going to negatively impact your vacation.
Right.
That's true.
You know, kind of like a bad grade.
But, yeah, and I think it's going to take people a while to acclimate to it, too.
Well, there are still, you know, that's very true. In fact, that there are still people, you know, who go to Walt Disney World and you're like, did you get a fast pass? It's like, well, what's a fast pass? And it's like, you're kidding, right? This system's been in place for 10 years. And it's like, well, I haven't, you know.
My 11-year-olds are amazed by people. They're like, why don't they fast pass?
You know what? The more people that don't fast pass, the better it is for us. So just that's hush. True.
I agree. But you know, the weird thing is that Disney's argument is that if people who go on the Disney cruise are willing to book, you know, say, okay, I'm dining at Palos this evening, I'm dining in, you know, Animator's Palette the next night, if they're willing to do that, you know, doesn't that set of skills then translate, you know, or that certain, you know, I have to own a certain amount of my vacation, if I'm planning things in advance.
I think it's one thing, though, to sort of say, you know, I know where I'm going to eat. Like in Disney World, you know, I can make my dining reservations 180 days out. But when it comes right down to it, the idea of making plans, what I'm going to ride that day, that's, I think it's absurd. Yeah, and it doesn't work for me at all.
Okay. And that's a valid criticism. Because again, think about it. And I'll tell you from the opposite of the fence, they hate this idea. They really do. Because it's like, look, what happens if, you know, we have a technical malfunction and we now, you know, we have to shut down Splash Mountain for an hour or God help us the rest of the day.
Right.
What do you do with all these people who booked, you know, 3 months ago that they're going to ride Splash?
Yeah. And I'm thinking, you know, if you have a tummy ache or if you're tired or if, you know, things happen in life and
especially with kids,
you know, or you have a headache
when you're traveling with kids. I mean, you know, when my kids were really little, like, you know, 2 or 3 years old, it was really hard to plan the morning out, much less an entire week. So I don't know. I think there should be a degree of spontaneity involved in a trip. And while my having to be at 1900 Park Fair at 6 o'clock on a Tuesday night is somewhat constraining, it's not quite as constraining as telling me that I have to be at Splash Mountain at 10 a.m., you know, and then at 12, I have to be somewhere else.
Especially if it's pouring rain. Do you really want to be there? Or, you know, there are different things that happen. It could be really cold, things that you can't anticipate.
Right. Or your kid getting sick. I mean, think of how many times you've planned a meal and, you know, and then like, you know, like we had a trip, you know, last year where my oldest son, he was just sick for 3 days and he would walk in a place and vomit. I mean, you know, that happens on trips. So, I mean, you know, I at least with the meals, that's all I had planned. I could sort of recoup my day, you know, but I don't know.
Well, conversely, though, the wristbands, all right, the parents that did the playtest of the Prince's Royal Hall, the experience there where, you know, they had done the home. I mean, they'd done their homework. They provided Disney with the information about their daughter's favorite color, what their pet's name, what their best friend was, what their activities were. And then they sent their daughter into the room with Cinderella, who is keeping one eye on, you know, the Obama-like teleprompter that's up in the corner that the kid can't see. That's feeding like, oh, Cindy, so nice to see you. And, you know, thank you for coming all the way from Cincinnati. And, you know, that how is your dog? And how are your, and it's just, they said, it blew the kid's mind. And what was really cool is that Disney checked in like 2 weeks after the playtest and the parents were like, the kid is still talking about this. All right, because it was one of these things where it's one thing to go walk up with an autograph book and have your picture taken and get your autograph and leave. It's another thing to have a 1 or 2 minute long conversation with Cinderella, who knows you, all right, who knows who you are. And it made, you know, it was one of these things where for those parents, it's, I don't, what would you pay for that? I don't care. You know, I'll mortgage the house. All right. To see my kid like that.
I think.
And with a Disney character.
I think this is going to be.
I don't even like that because then you're just raising a generation of kids who are even bigger snowflakes than they already are. It's like, you know what? If walking up to Snow White and getting her autograph and having her, you know, talk to you for a minute isn't good enough for my kid, forget it. Snow White doesn't need to know about my cat. My kid's special. They don't need, you know what I'm saying?
I think it would be interesting.
Kind of overdone.
Well, first of all, I got to tell you, I love the term snowflake. I'm stealing that.
Go ahead. It's not original, and you may have it.
But still, that's a great description for this generation of kids. But at the same time, for a lot of parents who have that artifact child, you know, the kid who's, you know, the one or two kids that's at the top of the pyramid, so to speak. To be able to deliver on that sort of a fantasy, you know, just makes you feel like super parent, you know. And again, don't get me wrong. I understand that for a lot of parents who just want to raise a good kid, they don't want, you know, to spend, you know, their entire life savings, you know, creating this falsely entitled child. But for something like that, for a certain type of kid, it really, really, really does have an impact. And it really does make a special childhood memory. Now, let's be honest here. They've only done play tests of this, all right? Face it, you're in the Cinderella costume. You're on stage for a half hour. You get a half hour in the break room. But you do this for 8 hours a day? You know, by hour seven, you know, are you getting tired? Are your eyes getting bleary? Or how's your dog? Barfy. I mean, it's Lassie. You're having trouble reading. You know, it's going to be quite so magical in hour seven.
I think a good application of this would be on repeat visits. And I know that's going to take a while. But, you know, if you have a database on when you visited last and who you visited, it would be great if Jasmine said, you know, it's, you know, been a long 6 months since I've seen you or whatever, to be able to relate back to a previous encounter, I think would be special to be, psychic. That's not them.
That totally creeps me out.
I don't think they need to be psychic.
I'm one of those
kind of
people.
Like a big brother's watching.
Yeah.
Thing.
I'm one of the, I agree with Lauren. I'm one of those people. I think all this data mining, it totally creeps me out. You know, we had a very funny joke. Actually, it was a Pixie agent. I don't know if this is appropriate, but there was a Pixie agent who was joking about it. And it was one of the guys. And he said, you know, they're going to track your toilet paper use. And then they can put the right number of toilet paper rolls in your room for you. And I just thought, you know, it's almost that bad. I don't really need that.
Okay. Let me boy, you are scary because there's
what do you mean?
Well, no, Chris because
is,
I,
Chris is not your average about, guest.
It was actually documented somebody who works on this project who was the talking
about paper one.
Well, no, actually, the other end. It'll eventually involve toilet paper, but it was talking about. Well, look, say you know we've got your credit card linked into this thing, and say we've noticed over the week you've been at Disney World, you're buying a churro every day or so.
Oh, that's Chris, you know, exactly.
It's your last day, and suddenly your iPhone goes off, and it's like, hey, you know, Steve, you know, we know it's your last day, and we want to do something special for you, so here's a coupon for a free churro. You know,
sweet.
Just, you know, our treat. Thank you for coming to Walt Disney World. Of course, you're going to go up to the cart and take the family, and it's like, you're not going to buy just the one churro. You know, you're going to end up buying
don't
something.
Know, Steve.
No, see, they would know me. They would never give me that coupon.
Okay. But you,
but Chris would go. Chris would take the family.
But you,
would,
you get
I'd not for a Disney World churro. Those are terrible. Mm-hmm. I'll save my churros at Disneyland.
For Disneyland, she would do it.
Well, no. See, again, that's that's the kind of crowd we're dealing with here. It's like, God,
well, I've got it. You know,
the Florida churros are terrible, but
come on, you know those churros are better out.
See, yeah,
I
see,
do.
None of this.
I do, but that doesn't make it any less sad that I know that.
The consensus is.
It's important to know that. That's the kind of service we provide to our listeners.
No, important is algebra, history. You know, that's all been crowded out now for churro information in my brain. It's, just, it's very sad. I used to be an intelligent adult, and now I talk about Disney.
Churro, Dole Whip.
I just don't think, I don't know. It just, you know, while I find Disney to generally be an amazing company, and I generally think they you know, treat guests really well. I just don't, I just feel like there's this guy with a gigantic brain somewhere at Disney rubbing his hand. He looks like a little like Dick Cheney to me. Rubbing his hand
wow,
together.
The image. I
know. He's rubbing his hands together and he's going, okay, what can I find out about these people now? You know, it just feels, I don't know. It feels creepy. Creepy.
There is certainly an aspect of this that is, you know, between the doing your homework before you go on vacation, you know, picking your ride times or providing information about your kids or that sort of thing, that really does border on creepy. I would still like to see it in action before I do finally sign off on like, this is creepy. I
yeah.
You know what would be cool is if you filled that out like you were filling out a Mad Lib.
Well, first of all, you'd have to put your child into therapy. You know, it's like, why, hello, dirt face. Come in. Yes. You know, I understand your parents are sending you away to military school. It's that's
leave it to Steve.
That would be a good way to break it to him.
That would be a great, that would be the that'd be a perfect.
Oh, boy.
That'd be
nobody
a great
Disney is listening.
So like, how was your first year at military school? What, you haven't gone yet?
Oh,
that would be
I don't know. Well, I'm not as worried as Chris is. I think it'll be cool.
That's because you don't think deep thoughts like I do.
I don't. I don't stay awake at night worrying about if someone knows my pet's name, because I don't use my pet's name in my passwords, so I'm okay with doing that. But
you understand, though, just to sort of, again, this is Disney. And literally within the last 3 weeks, Disney has cut a deal with, I want to say, Petco for Mickey Mouse, Pluto.
Oh, no. PetSmart.
There we go.
PetSmart.
And the Kermit toy. So trust me, if they have the name of your pet, you know, at some point in the great data mining operations, Steve. How is Tippy? Does he need a toy? You know,
you're gonna get like a goofy stuffed dog toy in the mail.
Sweet. Yeah, you know, just
you gotta make sure you fill that out correctly the first time, or it could haunt you for the rest of your life.
That is actually true because I did that My Disney whatever thing on the website the other day, and it has me down as a 3-year-old, and I can't figure out how to change it.
You know what, though, so, Chris? That's appropriate. Perfect.
Yeah. Well, it was when I was throwing a fit trying to change it, so.
Oh, wow.
But it won't let me be the lead guest in any of my dining reservations because
I'm you're not a rage.
Rage.
It only lets you book
one
small
of those
world.
Times to have the conversation. Look, the I may be an infant, but I have the credit card. Okay, so all right, you know, just
I'm old enough to buy a ticket.
There you go.
Oh, that's terrible.
I love our deviations.
I know. Sorry.
Oh wow.
See, this is much more enjoyable than me talking for a half hour about Downtown Disney. So please continue.
So wait, you didn't answer the question because it was my fault, of course, because I started talking about bathrooms. But you didn't answer the question about Seven Dwarfs Mine Train Ride.
They
you had to go yes or no.
Well, see, this is you don't get yes or no's out of Imagineers. You get these quantified answers to the effect of, look, if we don't have a wet summer and we can get the exterior, you know, planted, you know, that's one thing. They're at the point now where they're starting to load show scene elements. I mean, you've obviously seen the track work. Things have been loaded into place. They've got, you know, the foam core and they're pouring in concrete, but it's all now dependent on, do we have a wet spring? Do we have, you know, a summer where we have unusual weather? Does, you know, everything that we have at our manufacturers in the Far East who are shipping things, you know, literally on the slow boat to China, you know, or from China to come here, you know, if everything arrives at the right time and we can get it loaded in, yes, we'll begin soft opening test and adjust for a holiday period of 2013 and officially open in January. I mean, it'll be sort of the same traffic pattern that you saw earlier, you know, this past year with so much of New Fantasyland. The only difference, of course, is that with this ride, in fact, this is what's going to be frustrating for a lot of people, is they're going to run that coaster for the better part of the summer with nobody on it.
Oh, that's terrible. You shouldn't have even told me that.
That's just going to torture us.
Yeah, that's like a bad image.
Chris is
going to
sneak on.
Well, remember, this is the new ride system where the cars sway back and forth. And, you know, they've done all their engineering work. They've done all their computer modeling. But that's not the same as running a ride vehicle through a building and finding. I mean, remember what happened with the second Dumbo where they were off by a quarter inch and scraped all the paint off of everything.
That was hilarious.
You know, I mean,
not to them.
I remember talking with somebody when they're building Expedition Everest and they were explaining about the envelope of protection. Are you familiar with this term at all? Or
No.
Okay. The deal with the envelope of protection is it's supposedly if a 6'6" tall man is seated in the front seat of your ride vehicle and has the arm reach, you know, what could he touch as you were moving through that building, you know, along that ride track. So the way Disney tests this, and I kid you not, this is how they do it. They take a 2x4, all right, and jam it into the seat, you know, and then send, in the case of Expedition Everest, they send the coaster along the entire route of the track. And if the, you know, I remember being there, you know, with one of the engineers and they was watching the car come down the hill with an obviously shredded 2x4. He said, now you see that? That's a problem. You know, so, you know, they've got to go walk the entire ride track now and figure out where did that 2x4 get in contact with the wall and either, you know, take out the obstruction or make the adjustment to the track or whatever it is to make sure that nobody gets hurt on this attraction. So even with a coaster like this, which, just to be fair here, this is the coaster that is somewhere between the Great Goofini, that the old
the Barnstormer,
the coaster that's now the Barnstormer, and Big Thunder. I mean, in that it has one hill and one ride out. You know, the Barnstormer is one hill, one ride out. Big Thunder has three hills and three ride outs. So this is two hills, two ride outs. But they've still got to, you know, make sure that it, particularly with these swaying cars. But you're going to go by there this summer and see a lot of water dummies, which are literally just hard plastic human-like shells that they'll fill with water to approximate the weight of actual people riding this thing. And just run it over and over and over and over again to make sure it all works and that when the car sways, it doesn't scrape against the wall or, you know, a plastic dummy doesn't hit his head. So, yeah, you'll see this running this summer, and it will be frustrating. But, you know, this is all part of just making sure it's safe, you know, that and that it can operate the way it has to operate when it opens to the public, you know, late this fall or, you know, your early winter.
Oh, no, one other, I had one last question for you. Unless Lauren.
Oh, wait, actually have one too. So
okay.
Don't.
Well, this is Steve's last question.
I wanted to jump over to Animal Kingdom because I haven't heard anything on, you know, I've heard Avatar is going to happen. Avatar's dead. Then there was some plans that came out. I don't know. It's been 6, 8 months, maybe even a year because it goes by so quick, you know, where there was like a boat ride and a video, you know, like 3D type attraction. Has any movement happened over at Animal Kingdom with anything?
Well, I can tell you from conversations I had in February in California that Avatar is still moving forward. The problem is that, you know, this is James Cameron, who is a really busy guy. And in fact, the thing that is really scaring Disney right now is that they are getting ever closer to the start of production of Avatar 2. And, you know, they wanted so much of this already locked down and designed. And the thing is, Cameron wants to build the most amazing theme park attraction that's ever been built in the history of man. You know, he wants the sort of thing that, you know, your jaw dropped, your eyes explode. I mean, it just, but, you know, and Cameron never does anything small. I mean, think about, you know, building, what, 3/4 size Titanic to actually sink it, you know, in, you know, that tank in Mexico, you know, the, you know, when he decided to make a 3D film, he actually made the studio buy a 3D camera so he could then take it apart to figure out how 3D worked. I mean, so Cameron has spent a lot of his time educating his way to the way various theme parks work, you know, various rides, that sort of thing. And he keeps coming back to the table and talking to Disney, and it's one of these things where they really want to make him happy, but at the same time, they don't want to pay, you know, $1.5 billion to build Avatar Land. So there's been some pushing back and forth, and as a result of which, a project that really should be a lot further along in locking down solid design at this point is still pretty amorphous at this point. You know, that said, you know, that in fact, just today, Staggs was saying, no, we are, you know, Avatar is moving forward. But you notice the language is always very careful. It's not like we finished designing the Avatar ride. You know, we're going to break ground soon. It's always we have movement. We are moving forward. But, you know, just the unsaid thing is James Cameron is James Cameron. All right. And it's we're not going to finish this and get this done until James is happy. And so what was supposed to be open in 2015 is now sliding to 2016. And it's tough because if ever there is a park, a Walt Disney World park that needs this attraction, it's Animal Kingdom. And think about it. You go to that park in late afternoon, it's empty. I mean, people have come early in the morning. They've seen all the animals. They've done all the rides. And they're headed out the door at 4:00. And if Avatar were there, you know, on particularly on where it's supposed to go, which is to the left of the entrance in behind Rainforest Cafe,
yep.
This would then allow that park to extend its operating hours by 2, maybe 3 hours. You know, you finally would have a nighttime program. And in fact, there's wonderful after-hours lighting. There's amazing stuff for that park that they could actually use if it stayed open later. But, you know, that's just not going to happen until James is happy and can turn the key. And there's actually been some concern in-house, given that Iger is leaving or starts stepping down out of the company in 2015 and is gone totally. I mean, leaves the company by 2016, that, you know, given that he was the guy who, you know, sort of greenlit this deal, he was the one with Staggs that, you know, pursued this with Cameron and the people at Fox, that, you know, very shortly, Disney's got to start searching for the next CEO. And, you know, it's
you know, a lot of people have been assuming, well, it's either Staggs or it's Rizzullo. And the vibe that's coming off of the board right now is like, no, I think we're going outside because, you know, face it, two guys who each ran two different divisions of the company. You know, this is Disney, a multinational corporation that's building theme parks in China and is, you know, looking to head to Brazil and, you know, has interactive and plays on Broadway and that sort of thing. We need somebody who's, you know, had lots of experience running a major corporation. So, and if the guy who comes through the door, you know, or the guy that they start searching for this job, and obviously they're going to want to bring in fairly early to do, you know, to start a transition with Iger. So it will be, you know, an easy shift of power as opposed to, you know, fumbled. If this guy isn't a James Cameron fan, this project could die, you know. And I mean, face it, think about it. You know, Disney just bought Star Wars, you know, just bought, all of those Lucas properties. This is a Disney that owns Marvel. This is a Disney owns Pixar and the Muppets. It's like, if James Cameron and the Avatar thing slips through the cracks, it's like, well, gee, that's really bad. Okay, moving on. You know, yeah. It's not going to be a tragedy. And I think that's one of the things they keep trying to get across to James. It's like, James, we got other options here. You got to meet us halfway here. And meanwhile, he's investigating, you know, my understanding, he was looking at the 3D system that Peter Jackson used for Hobbit to see whether or not something like that, that had the higher frame rate, would deliver a better 3D experience. And I think they've talked him out of that one, but the very little else has been decided at this point. So
I don't know why, but I just feel like that's just never going to happen.
Well,
it's wishful thinking.
That's, you know, true.
I will tell you this much. They're $20 or $30 million in at this point.
Oh, are they?
Yeah, and don't get me wrong. I mean, compared to the $1.5 billion of, you know, for, you know, FastPass Plus and, you know, the Next Gen initiative, you know, that's pocket change. But yeah, there's a lot of money already spent. A lot of green foam models that have been built. A lot of boards. A lot of meetings. And Cameron is always, that's good, but, you know, and, you know, so just, I wish they were further along. I really do. But it's just, he's a really particular guy, and it's just not happening as fast as everybody had hoped.
Chris, your turn.
Okay, so I have a question. You know that the D23 conference is in August in Disneyland, of course. What do you think the big announcement will be for this conference? Do you think it's going to be Cars Land coming to Walt Disney World?
That's a really interesting question. I know that they are, again, this is a funny way to put this, but they're kicking the tires for Cars Land in Orlando.
But
and they, you know, don't get me wrong, that the Radiator Springs, you know, racers has really proven to be a popular attraction out there. It's probably more likely, though, because again, look, they already poured a lot of money into the studio. I mean, for example, putting the new ride film into, you know, Star Tours: The Adventures Continues, that wasn't inexpensive. You know, I mean, that was a good chunk of change, and they got, you know, that actually did do something for attendance levels at Disneyland. It really didn't do anything in Florida. You know, they couldn't market it. So the studio is definitely pushing for a new attraction. But there's a lot of stuff on the table. I mean, you know, for example, have you heard about the Tangled musical they're talking about to finally replace Beauty and the Beast, the stage show?
No, I hadn't heard about that.
Okay. It's
That'd be great.
Yeah, it's
yeah, that's a good one.
25-30 minute long version of the film, you know, and I'm particularly, what makes me happy is that they are going to do, I you know, I Had a Dream, you know, so we're going to get Hook Hand on stage singing.
Well, it's probably one of the best Disney songs ever. I love that.
Oh, go ahead, sing a few bars.
No, my kids already complained enough about that. So
really, you know, the I'd still like breaking femurs. You can count me with the dreamers. No, awesome. It's a great song. It's a great, and evidently what's cool about it is they've been dumbing out, for example, they're going to do the lantern scene in the boat, and they figured out how to do the lanterns on the back wall as projections. So do some in theater effects of, you know, lanterns coming down from the ceiling and that sort of stuff. Evidently it's going to be a beautiful show during the day, but if you can catch, you know, when they do it at night, it's good. That scene alone is going to be spectacular. But it's, you know, but at the same time, it's, you know, you have to be the one who goes, okay, the generation of people who've been going here for 20 years, who've been seeing Beauty and the Beast, it's like, this goes away. And listening to the people complain. But that's...
Oh, it's going
to
be bad.
Yeah, yeah. But it's long overdue. That show,
that's,
I mean...
been there forever.
You know, I'll tell you flat out that show was only supposed to run 18 months to 2 years. That was never the plan that would be in place for 20 years. I mean, hell, that when it was originally in...
Has it been that long?
I think about it. That show debuted at that theme park back when when there was no Sunset Boulevard, back when the Hollywood Bowl actually sat where the entrance to Sunset Boulevard is right now.
Wow. You know, it doesn't feel like that long.
No, it's been there forever.
And it's really good. I mean, every time I see it, I think it's good. But if you could put Tangled in there, which honestly I think is a better movie with better music. I know everybody probably doesn't agree with me, but... I would love that.
Well, you know, but there's a lot of people who feel the same way within the company. But at the same time, it's just sort of like, you know, when you do something like that, you take away somebody's childhood memory. And, you know, and this, it always becomes a balancing act between what, you know, what do you take out and what do you bring in? And in the case of a show like that, you can bring that in for roughly a hundredth of what it's going to cost to build Radiator Springs. You know, I mean, you know, when you think of the concrete and steel and ride track and show elements, you know, the animated figures and that sort of thing. I mean, oh God, that attraction all by itself was like $350 million. You know, and then if you're committing to doing you know, Radiator Springs and doing Flo's Diner and, you know, that sort of thing. This turns into serious money very quickly. And, you know, and meanwhile, the ops people at that park are like, have you seen the crowds we're dealing with on the street where Toys R Mania is? You know, that this is a backstage area that was never meant to be open to the public. And, you know, if you get down there in a June or July, where those buildings are holding the heat and the humidity, it's brutal back there.
Yeah.
So to suddenly add, you know, a huge new, you know, Pixar themed attraction that's sure to be popular. And so you're now guaranteeing that 90% of your guests are going to enter the park and head up that narrow street for that brand new, you know, thrill ride.
That, so you make a really good point, because if you think about where Cars Land is located in California Adventure, there's actually really easy in and out. And there are a couple different ways to get in and out. But Hollywood Studios has always been a park that's hard to navigate and deal with crowds. So I can't imagine it if you really increase those crowds. It would be a nightmare. It's bad enough during Star Wars weekend.
They're actually talking about, as if they're going to commit to this, it's a interesting build. One of the ideas is that, you know, they're, if this happens, they discontinue the tram tour. And if they discontinue the tram tour, that then means that a lot of the tram tour route, you can then turn into public walkways. In fact, you can level production buildings back there that have been used for years. So they're actually talking about, what they do is they'd attempt to direct people in to Cars Land, where it would be built, through the animation courtyard. You'd actually go in through the archway and, you know, sort of the theater that's off to the left there where the Little Mermaid show is.
Yep.
If you walk past that, there's a gift shop and a sort of a bathroom area, and they would blow in a street that would take you behind Toy Story Mania. And in fact, would supposedly, if they do the full version of this, would take you by the Monsters Inc. coaster before you finally got to Cars Land. But yeah, that's actually another part of this conversation, because it's sort of like, what is Disney's studios? You know, what is Disney's Hollywood studios? I mean, is this where we're going to put all of our Star Wars stuff? Is this where we're going to put all of our Pixar stuff? And if so, what does that then mean for the other parks? You know, there's a lot of interesting conversations going on these days, and some of them are keying off of decisions that are being made for Shanghai. I mean, that's you know, that could be a whole show unto itself, talking about the decisions they're making about that park to try to, you know, create a Disney theme park for a public that, you know, for an audience that really doesn't know the Disney characters as well as we do. But at the same time, some of the stuff that's being designed for there, they are already looking back and thinking, boy, this would be great if we put this in one of the stateside parks. So, I mean, to be honest, though, they haven't flat out said it such. There are only two pre-existing attractions that have been built at Disney parks that are being built, that are translating directly over to Shanghai. And one's Peter Pan, and the other one's the Winnie the Pooh ride from Florida. But everything else, I mean, though, it was kind of interesting as I was looking at both the Dumbo ride and the merry-go-round that they showed, you know, the picture that came out of the annual meeting last week. And it just said, like, I think those exist in other parks. What is this crap about only two rides? So, but again, that's the thing at Disney, is that this is absolutely positively what we're going to... Oh, we changed our minds. So I guess to bring this full circle, you know, we should anticipate that next week they're going to, you know, they're going to cancel, you know, Disney Springs and, I don't know, put in a Tilda World. So...
Well, you never
don't know. Say that. Somebody will say they heard on Mouse Chat that they were canceling Disney Springs and putting in a Tilda World.
It must be true. They heard it on Mouse Chat.
It's got to be. You know what? Before we go into any more shenanigans, I'm going to wrap it up right here. Thank you to PixieVacations.com for sponsoring the podcast. And, of course, thank you to Jim Hill. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome, guys. This is always great fun.
We'll have to have you back on for a Shanghai show.
Yeah, we'll do that.
Okay. As soon as they cancel that and put in the Tilt-A-Whirl, we'll definitely talk.
Oh, the rumors are going to start flying. Well, if you like our shows, you can go to iTunes or go to mousechat.net and you can download them there. Please send us your comments and questions to comments@mousechat.net. Please join us again here next time on Mouse Chat. Clear?